Thank you. If there are any cases uncracked at the end of this ACC, we're importing an 80 from the South Pacific who has a special skill in opening coconuts. Well, this is 21st American ACC Supplementary Lecture number 7. Title: Diagnosis of an Uncracked Case. It may be of some slight interest to you, on leaving this ACC, to crack a few cases here and there. There are those amongst us, of course, who would rather plow, who would rather just go on and on and on, and audit and audit and audit and audit. But I trust those are in the minority, and that in very short order, they will be obliterated. A reactive bank could be conceived as having a core. That core is apparently, at first glance, the Freudian unconscious, and would therefore be the most unconscious thing a person was unconscious of, wouldn't it? Now, we have been led astray by our forebears. Had forebears once. He was right around the sedan chair, and I was led astray by them many times. Thought you'd better wake up.
Thank you.
By the naming of the reactive mind, which they call the unconscious mind. Now, the core of a reactive mind is so far from unconscious that it is the one thing the individual answers up to and the one thing on which he will have his greatest single reality. The core of the reactive mind, then, is not an unconscious thing for which you are plumbing with Kelvin fathometers. It isn't anything for which you are dredging with a Texas oil rig. It's right there, and you're looking at it. That's it. Now, that will be the greatest reality point that you can make the PC contact when you have contacted it. But if you have not contacted it, it will go on being unreal because he's it. But the moment that you contact it, it will become the greatest reality. This is very important. It means then, if you do not at once contact a high level of, quote, ha, reality, which is very ha, real to the PC, if you don't contact this at once in auditing, you're wasting your time. Several requisites, then, must exist in the auditing of a PC, and where these are disobeyed or ignored, cases flounder and flub. First of these is the case must be run at its level of reality. Second, of course, is that the case must be run with a complete understanding on the auditor's part that he is auditing the reality of the PC. The PC's reality is not there for him to criticize, it's there for him to audit. Several other things fall out of the hamper as soon as we start to examine this, and that is the PC is being something, and that thing is the realest thing to the PC. But up to the moment it's contacted, he is apparently unaware of it. That's because he is it, but the moment it's contacted, he becomes immediately aware of it. Now, I could go so far as to say that where this has not been done with a case, we're going to have a long, hard pull of it. I appreciate, I respect your great confidence in the human race. My hat is off to you for believing in your fellow man. In every place but an auditing room. And I won't take my hat off to you for respecting all this in an auditing room. I will simply think an overt thought. The biggest mistakes that you will make, unless I call them very strictly to your attention, are mistakes on the estimation of the reality of the PC. Because the PC can run a process, because the PC can run a process and get gain from it, is now no criteria of good auditing. Neither is it a criteria of good processing. Because I can give you dozens and dozens, nay, hundreds of processes which will get a consistent and continual gain on a PC, and which will give you wins, which will give the PC an idea of winning, which will improve his intelligence, which will improve his IQ, which will improve him and improve him and improve him. And with this ACC, we're done with that. We are not any longer interested in improving and improving and improving somebody on a grading scale. That's why I could say in a little earlier lecture, it is almost as if we were just beginning. Because we're beginning with a new look at processing, a new steady look, which means that we crack a case at the hardest point of the case, which is its beginning into auditing. To do that is a considerable triumph, because the hardest part of a case is always its entrance point into auditing. You're always auditing, when you begin a case, the roughest part of the case. Isn't that right? Because the case getting better is then an easier and easier case to run. Now, this has actually deterred even auditor training. Deterred it badly, because, of course, on a co-audit or picking up PCs here and there, you at once got the worst of the PC. That was the worst state he would be in, is the moment he starts auditing. Well, then that required then that we have some heroic answers to the situation, and that we understood it very, very well, and that we coped with it very well, and that we became very dissatisfied with slow, gradual progress. Because slow, gradual progress is always yours. You can always do this. If you can't crack the case, you can go on and get slow gains. But please realize that if this is the case, in this case, you're not operating on a cracked case. You are simply improving a person's ability, limited consistently and continually by this thing I have called a core of the reactive bank. You could probably and undoubtedly improve the case up to a point where this would crack too, looking at it as a long haul basis. If you audited him long enough, he would eventually get to a point where he would fly apart and all straighten up. As a matter of fact, cases of a medium difficulty are sufficiently easy to audit that you could audit such a person undoubtedly through on a long gradual process to clear, without worrying too much about it. And that's what I don't want you to do. I want you to audit them to clear. but I want you to rescale your patience. I've been teaching you patience for 8 years. You've learned your lesson well. So now you can forget about it. If a case is gaining slowly, it hasn't been cracked. There's a new stable datum. Now, you're not going to find anything in most PCs. Certainly 90% of the people you audit are not going to complain. That just leaves thee and me to complain about this. The person's going to come in, he's going to get audited, and he's going to feel much better. He's going to go along, and everything's going to be happy, cheerful, everything's fine. And you go home and handle things a little better, and he isn't as sick as he used to be, and he doesn't have calls the way he used to be, and he's always happy, and he's telling you he's fine, he's making progress, and everything is fine. And for you to be the discontented person, the malcontent in this particular case, is rather new and strange, because at any time in the last few years, if most of your pre-clears had acted this way towards you, you would have been more than satisfied. Isn't that right? And the gradual gain was something that you looked at as something very desirable. Well, why worry about a gradual gain any more than you really should worry about the praise of the pre-clear? I don't want to compare pre-clears to unfavorably, because that isn't the case, and so on. But why need praise? Why do your pre-clear have to tell you he's getting well for you to find it out? Now, that's quite remarkable. This is one thing you don't have to ask the pre-clear about. Not now. Now, there's a condition that exists with the PC, and that condition has to do with two things, memory and emotion. His memory is bad, and his emotion is bad. These two factors are wrong with the PC. There might be an awful lot of things right with him, but these two things he will tell you are wrong with him. For instance, let's take the usual look of asking somebody how far back he can remember. And he says, I remember back to the time when I was 3 years old. Everybody, in old 19th century psychology, everybody would have said, gee, you know, boy, he has a terrific memory. I say today, boy, what a case of amnesia. Then somebody else comes along, and he can only remember back to the time he was 12 years old. Oh, it's getting pretty wild. And somebody else comes along, and they don't remember things very well when they were 22 or 23. Back of that's kind of foggy. So your PC's getting pretty foggy now. But listen, it didn't close in on this lifetime. His memory didn't begin at birth this lifetime. That isn't the finite reach of memory. All the years he has been alive, himself, is the reach of memory. So that you can see that most of the people you're picking up and auditing are almost 100% occluded. I don't care if the guy's got a wide open bank and everything is fine and he can see facsimile and so forth. He doesn't remember these things. This bird's practically wiped out. He can remember when he was 1 year old. What life, I would ask him. He'd say, what life? What do you mean? This life, of course. You say, boy, I don't know. I don't know. Can you find your way home at night? Now, don't you go misestimating this memory factor. You hear me? Don't misestimate it. Now, somebody answers up and he says, oh, I can remember when I entered high school. I remember that very, very well. That was in 1922. You say, go on. Well, the guy says, I can remember it was 1922. You say, go on. He says, go on what? You say, well, what's the rest of the time factor? You know, 1922? What month? Most guys say, well, let's see, it must have been September. You say, what's the matter with you? Can't you remember things? You have trouble, you have trouble getting home at night? Can you find the right house? He sure ought to be able to say, all I remember in high school, it was about 10:22 a.m., September the 21st, 1922. Yes, high school was located on Bay Street. Teacher's name was Throgdorp. Tell you his marks, so forth. What's so amazing about being able to remember something? A life, to a marked degree, is a person's beingness. And as he ceases to remember his life, so he loses beingness. Just that much of him's gone. And of course, the final thing is he's wiped out clear to PT. Now, only now, does psychology and psychiatry of the 19th century get in there and pitch and call it amnesia. He can't remember what happened this morning, who he is, where he's going, if he is or isn't married, so on. He can't remember any of these facts. He's totally wiped out. They say, aha, he's forgetful. Now, just as we're taking now a different look between gradual progress and the progress we ought to get, so a look at this memory should be taken. He can remember a lot of this lifetime. He knows he's a boy. That compared to really being able to remember things. Now, you see, that's comparable data. The other factor we're terribly interested in, burningly interested in, is emotion. That thing about which people complain most is emotion, lack of. Emotional shut-off. This, as a person gets worse and worse, is more and more in his mind. He's more and more worried about the fact that he doesn't feel things the way he ought to. He isn't happy. He isn't sad. He really doesn't get angry anymore. He doesn't even get bored. He doesn't get enthusiastic. And this worries him. He can't enjoy life anymore. This is a common denominator of what people think about. Most of the time they don't think about it anymore. But if you asked them, they would agree with you that this was the way it was. Now, to most people, emotion is the sensation of livingness. And whether we precisely define it or not is beside the point. They are deficient in sensing their own livingness. They do not feel alive, and that's what they normally call emotion. They don't have emotion. There's a shut-off there. Now, these are the two most important things that you unlatch when you trigger a case. You do something violent to memory, and you do something violent to emotions when you trigger a case. You open both of these things up or close them totally down. I don't care which you do. Because if you run a process that closed them down, believe me, the same process will open them up a few commands later. Simple as that. You're running processes right now which sometime during the auditing session close off a PC's memory to such a degree that if you were to ask him suddenly what his name was, he'd give you almost any balderdash or just a comm lag. You say, what's your name? I don't advise you to do this, not part of the auditing commands. But if you were to do this, he's sitting there, and all of a sudden he's hit something, he's going, wog, wog. You say, what's your name? And he'd say, Tom, Pete? No, no. He's passing over a little chasm of forgetfulness here. And on the other side of that memory shut off, there's memory. Now let's take a motion. He's sitting there, and he more and more looks like dead wood, you know? And all of a sudden goes, boom, you know, cries and gets mad and screams. You just watch that thing happen. You'll see it happen. It'll happen quite fleetingly, probably. It won't happen with the slowness that you think. A guy, you think he'll go into it more and more and more and more over a period of an hour or two of auditing. No, he'll probably start into it at a much more rapid rate. And it'll be quite fleeting. And for a moment or two, he feels awful stupid. At the same time he feels awfully stupid, he's feeling awfully wooden. Unemotional. Feeling totally braced. And right on the other side of it, why, there's emotion. In other words, you're running through a shut-off of some kind or another. The shut-off of knowingness, the shut-off of livingness, the shut-off of emotion would be, of course, the basic shut-off on the case, would be right at the middle of the reactive mind, wouldn't it? It would be to that that all other items in the reactive mind pin themselves. Now, if you think of every reactive mind as something of a grouper, no matter how mild this grouping is, it's something of a grouper. And if you realize that it is a hidden, unacknowledged series or sequence of overts, you got it made. So the anatomy of the mind is a shut-off of livingness, a shut-off of memory, shut-off of emotion, if you want to call it that, to which all other shut-offs accumulate. And all engrams are deadeners. And all the reactive mind is a bundle of deadeners. No matter how it's tracked out on the track, no matter how it lights up, or how many U-wands or small trains go around, or pinball lights light up whenever you think a thought, it doesn't matter what it's doing. Truth of the matter is, it's pinned down as a shut-off from livingness. This, of course, is a total non-confront. You are running with all of your selected person and selected dynamic overt straight wire, the lowest order now reached on non-confrontingness. You're running the lowest level of non-confront. Now, there'd be two ways to look at this. One way, a person could be boosted up constantly and continually through abilities to confront to a point where he could confront everything. That's a theoretical course. But there is another way. Let's pick out the one thing in the reactive bank which under no circumstances would he ever conceive of confronting, has never even occurred to him to confront it. And we'll find promptly that we're starting to confront it, his greatest reality, sitting right there. We're running from a total unreality to a total, almost total reality. Bing, bing. If we can pick this thing out of the middle of the bank. Now, with what accuracy, with what delicate motion of the auditing command, do we begin this operation? I'm not going to ask anybody on an HAS course to take apart a case in this fashion, nor do I want you to go around trying to teach people how to do that. They don't even know the theory. All they know how to do is utter an auditing command many times, and the person gets better. Fine. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But don't try to sail in on somebody who's already gotten a halfway win on something or other and try to snow him under without any further instruction of any kind or any practice of any kind. Try to snow him under with the fact that he isn't taking apart the reactive bank snick. It's all right for me to snow you under here. That's what I'm here for. That's what you're here for. But you start trying to tell somebody this, how to do this, and you're going to wind up on the wrong side of it. In most cases, mostly because he doesn't have the technical background nor the understanding of the situation to even vaguely approach it. Now, the people here, you can approach this yourselves through a considerable amount of study, practice, knowledge, in Scientology. There's a big difference. Well, I'm going to tell you very rapidly how to find one of these things. At least the first method that has come up on how to find one of these things. More or less by rule and by rote. That doesn't mean somebody who hasn't your training will understand it. But nevertheless, this is it. We've got the inverted dynamics. Now, the inverted dynamics are very plain, clear, clean. The dynamic picture could be considered to be a series, just to give you a graphic example, a series of concentric circles with one in the center and the next dynamic out is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. See? Now, the truth of the matter is, when an individual starts to disperse, in other words, not confront, the confront is the thing we're looking at here. When he stops confronting one, he goes over and inverts into two and converts a reverse two. He starts to destroy two when he stops confronting one. Now, when he stops confronting two, he starts to destroy three. You get how this is. And so on up the dynamics back to eight. So you could say that this picture here, he draws back from confronting all the dynamics clear on down to one. When he stops confronting one, you can't lay it out on a two-dimensional plane, don't you see? He's gone on an inversion. It's all reversed now. Where he was trying to create it before, now he's trying to destroy it. And inversion, or inverted, simply means reversed. That which he was trying to put out is now coming in, and you get your overt act motivator pattern right there. So every time he tries to do something to something, something clobbers him. All right. Now, these dynamics can invert several times. And actually, quite a study could be made of just how these dynamics invert. But we don't care for our analysis here what inversion the PC is on. You'll just keep doing this. Your instructors and I had quite a conversation today, and this is what we finally whipped out as the modus operandi of isolation. I'll just give it to you with great rapidity here. You ask on the dynamics from 1 to 8, realizing that you're asking about inverted dynamics, but not saying so. You ask the preclear to describe to you each one of these dynamics. Now, when he describes these things to you, you just let him go on until you run one that's sort of got a comm lag or a pitch on it. There's something odd about this dynamic. Now you ask him for a terminal that represents that dynamic. And you run selected terminal dynamic straight wire on that object. Then you ask him for another terminal that represents that dynamic and run things he's done to that terminal. And then ask him for another terminal which represents that dynamic and ask him for again, things he's done to that terminal. You find this dynamic will straighten out. We stop asking about any terminal with the auditing command. Recall a time you did something to the terminal you finally got. When the person starts repeating formerly recalled times. In other words, he recalled kicking his old lady downstairs, and next time around, why, he evidently, he suddenly kicked my old lady downstairs. He's already doing a duplication. He recalls the second one for the second time, the third one for the third time. Yeah, that's off of it. That's all. Just get him somewhere close to PT and get that next terminal and get going again. Don't stall this case by simply asking them to go over these things repetitively on and on and on, because they'll all wind out in the long run anyhow. In other words, as soon as he starts recalling what he has recalled already before having done to the person, as soon as he's you got a repetitive duplication, you must have, for a duplication, some vestige of communication established with this particular terminal, its overts, so get off of it and get on to the next one. And again, you simply ask him for a terminal which represents the dynamic which you're working on. You ask him for a terminal that represents that dynamic, and he gives you a terminal, and you run, recall a time you did something to, and you name the terminal he gave you. As soon as it starts around once more, that is to say, he's recalling things a second time, get off of it. And once more ask him, you're working, let us say, on the third dynamic. You ask him for something that represents the third dynamic to him, and he gives you this thing. You call a time you did something to whatever he gave you, and run that one flat, and you just keep on going in this fashion. Now, when he's finally got this dynamic fairly straight, and he answers up very promptly on this dynamic, you continue your search and survey by dynamic. You might as well start all over with the first dynamic, all over again, and ask him for an example of that dynamic. Now, just how do you go about it? With a Scientologist, obviously, you don't have to reach very far for this. And with somebody else, you certainly had better call the dynamic by its proper name, like third dynamic, groups, fourth dynamic, mankind, fifth dynamic, animals and living things. Get the idea. Now, when you've gotten all of these eight dynamics sorted out, and you've had examples of terminals on each one of these dynamics, if you have not raised this case time after time to a high peak of reality and a new emotional turn-on, you're doing something wrong. Now, how do you find the dynamic that is out of line on an E-meter? This is important to you. It requires a new E-meter characteristic, and this characteristic is that of a change of pattern. There is a pattern to a needle motion. A needle motion has a pattern. It is doing something more or less repetitively. Or it's doing nothing repetitively, but at least it has some sort of a pattern. And when you hit the inverted dynamic on which the PC is hung up, you get a change of needle reaction. That pattern will change. It doesn't necessarily stick, it doesn't necessarily fall, but the pattern changes. As soon as you start talking about that dynamic, you get a pattern change. And you had better be pretty darned alert to your E-meter. And before you ask him about a dynamic, spot the pattern of motion of the needle. I don't care if you have to crank it up to get a pattern. It's doing something. Now you ask him about that dynamic, you have to have already noted what the pattern is in order to get the pattern change. So you compare the needle to the needle you just read. And that's the mostest clue you're going to get on most cases that you're trying to crack in this way, is just change a pattern. Now, having changed the pattern, you've got the dynamic you should be working on. And you ask him for an example of that dynamic and take whatever terminal he gave you, no matter how idiotic or stupid it seems. Don't argue with this man. You got him on his point of greatest insanity at this moment. Don't argue with him. You got the meat you're looking for. He finally sticks on the fifth dynamic, or the needle pattern changes. It's been going rather routinely here and there, and all of a sudden you say fifth dynamic, and it starts going, swinging slowly and gently. Got it made. So you say, all right, give me an example of the fifth dynamic. And he says, oh, that's very easy. Chimneys. Boy, now you really got it made. Because he believes this implicitly. And even my telling a PC that he would give me a wrong answer on this will not disarm him from giving me the same answer. This one he doesn't wise up to, evidently. A chimney is a perfect example of the fifth dynamic, and he'll sit there and argue with you concerning it. You run the process, recall a time you did something to a chimney. And when he gets around, so he's repeating the same recalls, he's recalling the same things twice, you ask him, give me another example of the fifth dynamic. And he says, well, an example of the fifth dynamic, a running stream. Oh, that's a little closer, see? So you say, Good. Thank you. Here's the auditing command. Recall a time you did something to a running stream. When he goes around and he's got the same recalls are coming up again, I don't care whether it took hours, days, or minutes for this to happen, you ask him for another example of the fifth dynamic. And he says, fifth dynamic, a twig. You say, all right, recall a time you did something to a twig. And repeat that over and over until he's recalling twice. Now give me an example of a fifth dynamic. And he says, a tree. You say, well, that's real good, but don't drop it there. Say, recall a time you did something to a tree. And if you haven't turned on some emotional shutoffs by that time, if he hasn't given some emotion one way or the other, then you read your e-meter cross-eyed, didn't let your PC eat breakfast, were auditing in the wrong place the wrong time, or he hadn't paid his bill, or something is wrong here. Something's real wrong. Now, this dynamic straight wire is a selected terminal selected by the dynamics to recall the overts against some terminal which represents that dynamic to the PC. Now, if you can look over all that complication, you can find the core of the reactive mind and blow it. It just hasn't got one spot, but you should be able to find the first one in the first time, blow the thing, and then find more dynamics that are askew and blow those, and then search again and find more dynamics that are out and blow those, and find more that are out and blow those, and all of a sudden have a PC that really starts rolling. Then is the time to go into selected person. Then is the time to go up from there into your upper overts, ARC break, not is, whatever upper process you wish to run. But this one is a case cracker, and this cracks the center of the reactive bank, and I think that's what we've been looking for. Thank you very much.